Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Weekends were made for sports.
Now do the robot voice. I want to hear it again.
Make more sharp robot.
That's a terrible robot voice.
A look at the weekend in sports with the inside story on the Blazers, the Ducks, and the Beavers.
Everyone, meet freelance alien bounty hunter, Shannon Sharp.
Shannon Sharp? The football guy?
Yeah, I hunt aliens now. Used to catch TDs, now I catch ETs.
You ever caught an alien, Shannon?
Not yet, Mr. Question, but I'll let you know when I do.
This is Sports Sunday with Mike Lynch.
Where are the turtles? Where are the turtles?
Come on, guys, get out of here.
Where are the turtles?
And Rashad Taylor.
Nobody calls me Lebowski. You got the wrong guy. I'm the dude, man.
On 1080 The Fan.
Hour 2 of 2 here on Sports Sunday. If you missed the first hour, you can find it on the Les Schwab Tires podcast after the show. Fan text lines 55305. Hate it or love it's coming up at 10:30, and we'll get into the last dance here coming up in about 10 minutes or so. But I did want to bring this to your attention. The MLB came out with their protocols, their rules, their proposals for how they're going to deal with bringing the sport back. By the way, I don't believe the players have agreed yet to their plan because they're upset about a revenue sharing thing and a salary cap that doesn't exist in baseball because they're trying to make some money back for the lost money. But the Athletic got part of the document that was sent out to teams about how they're going to handle bringing the sport back. I'm just going to kind of, there's a lot of little bullets here, but I just kind of want to read through some of them. We'll stop and kind of react as we keep going.
All right.
Regular testing for all players, managers, coaches, and umpires, plus a limited number of essential staff members who come into close proximity with players. That's to be expected, right? You know, all of these sports that are coming back are testing every single player, every single time. Still wish we had more tests for everybody else, but, you know, I guess beggars can't be choosers, right?
I guess not.
They're going to have they're going to monitor developments and testing to have the better tests, so on and so forth. Okay. All players must undergo intake screening upon arriving at spring training. The screening will take place at multiple locations and at staggered times. It will consist of a temperature check with a contactless thermometer and body fluid and blood samples. Individuals who are tested must self-quarantine at his or her spring training residence until the results of the testing are reported, likely within 1 to 2 days. I know some people who are not super thrilled with the temperature screening thing as a whole, where like you walk into a building and they check your temperature before you're allowed to go in. I have a friend who says like if the gym's reopened, but the gym is forcing him to check his vitals before he's able to go to the gym, he's not going to go to the gym. He's like, I'm paying money to go there. I feel like you shouldn't be taking my temperature. I didn't necessarily agree with that take. But I think there are some people out there that are like, look, man, you don't need to check my, I know I'm not sick. Like, you don't need to check my temperature. I think that's something that some people are kind of upset about, or at least uncomfortable about.
No, yeah, I think it's one of those things. Like, I went to a grocery store the other day, and I was stopped at the door because I didn't have a mask. And they're like, well, you need to come, everybody needs to wear a mask if you're going to come in. And initially, I was kind of like, huh? But then I was like, oh, well, okay. I have a bunch of them in the car, so I just went ahead and got one. But if this is the way that during this period that people are going to feel comfortable or that you're going to be able to gain admittance to something, then what's the problem? Just go ahead and let them take your temperature. I think people don't want to find out a lot of ways that, you know, that they might be sick. And so I think that's what it is. I think there's a little bit of fear in between there. It's like, well, what if they tell me I have a temperature or I have COVID and I have to go get things checked out. And, you know, a lot of people don't want to do that. Don't want to deal with that at this point. So I can understand. Part of me can understand, but the other part of me is like, if this is what it's going to take for now, you know, for you to get back to normal, if for you to get back to your normal routine as far as you know, going back to the gym or lifting or going whatever public place, like if that's the entrance fee is to let them swipe your forehead to get, I mean, go ahead and do that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care about it. If you want to take my temperature, what is it, a 0.8 second inconvenience while they hold up the thermometer to your head or to your ear and just beep. I mean, okay, you can do that so I can go work out. That's fine. Although this text, I think it's mostly in jest. What if you're hungover and they think you got the Rona? Well, you might not be going to the gym if you're hungover anyway, unless you're trying to sweat it all out. Communal water and sports drink coolers are prohibited. Only personal water or individually prepared sports drinks, bottles, or contactless water dispensers with disposable cups should be used. No spitting, no smokeless tobacco, no sunflower seeds in restricted areas. Any physical interactions such as high fives, fist bumps, and hugs must be avoided at all facilities. Makes sense. I think that's going to be the toughest thing for a lot of players is, I mean, this is all sports, but I mean, you think of baseball, you think of guys in a dugout chewing seeds and spitting and tobacco, and it's just like part of the sport. That's not going to be allowed. So I'm sure you're going to see guys fail at following that for, you know, times here and there, but that is one that's going to be probably pretty strictly enforced because that's how bodily fluids leave your body.
Yes, indeed.
Increased availability of hand washing and hand sanitizing stations. And after each half inning, players and other on-field personnel should wash or sanitize their hands. So they're going to have a station somewhere in the dugout. And basically, as everyone comes off the field, keeping their distance, of course, just they're going to get a little squirt of hand sanitizer, which, okay, sure.
Thanks, Mom.
It's awkward, I guess. But
yeah, right? And like the team mom just has a, you know, sanitizer and some cuties for everybody after we're done.
Ooh.
It'll be fun.
I still like cuties.
Cuties are good.
They're delightful. Lockers should be 6 feet apart. If not possible, clubs should erect temporary clubhouse or locker facilities in unused stadium space. The use of indoor batting cages is discouraged. Pitchers will use a personal set of baseballs during bullpen sessions. There's so much, man. There's also the big key here is they have so many little notes of how balls are going to be replaced during the game. But they're kind of vague. They keep saying, like, after multiple players touch the ball. But what is multiple players? On a regular pitch, the pitcher and the catcher touch the ball every single pitch, right? Sometimes the batter will touch it if he picks the ball up, although I'm assuming they'll be told not to do that. The umpire often will touch the ball. You know, I don't know if ball boys are going to exist in this world of baseball at the moment, but a ball boy will touch the ball. That's already 2 to 4 people on a normal pitch. How about a grounded to a double play? Pitcher touched the ball. Catcher may have touched the ball if they haven't replaced it yet. Third baseman touches the ball. Second baseman touches the ball. First baseman touches the ball. That's 5 people. Is that too many?
That's a lot of people. That's multiple people. That's half the team.
Right.
Half the team has touched the ball. So how
are they going to manage that? That to me is out of all of these, and by the way, I skipped about 30 things on this list. There was about 100 things that were put out in this Athletic article. That to me is the key of if you're trying to minimize the amount of people sharing the same baseball, how are you going to best maximize that or most efficiently maximize the amount of people touching it that doesn't risk sickness, right? That's a really big ask for a sport that's trying really hard to plow their way through this and return in July. So that to me was the big one where I was like, really? That's your answer? I don't know what they're going to do with that.
No, I still think there's a lot of stuff to figure out. Like all these things sound good. And, you know, I guess you're thinking about getting one step closer. So they all sound great. But again, once you start going over it, like how do you, am I supposed to stop the play after the third person has touched the ball? After the fourth person has touched? Does that mean the play is dead and they're deemed safe or what, like how does that work? And so I think are you going to make all the players wear gloves? I mean, they could possibly go to like, everybody's got to wear some type of baseball glove, some type of football glove.
I don't think that's going to happen. But
I don't either, but I mean, it's one of those things.
Well, one thing I was just thinking of instinctually that happens in baseball is after a strikeout, going around the horn, the catcher has the ball, tosses it down to third. Third baseman throws it to second baseman. Second baseman to short, to first, back to the pit. And it's like,
that will be discouraged according to the rules.
Exactly. But that's just something that's instinctual that happens in baseball.
Yeah, how often will the catcher throw it down the third and go, oop?
Exactly. And they're going to have to stop them. Oh, well, now hold up. All right, get that ball. Stop throwing the ball. Okay, are we good? All right, new ball. Okay, continue play. And that's just something that literally catchers do, that like right after they get the pitch and the strikeout is called, just they fling it down to third base. And it's just like, that's something that is somewhat of a tick to them and they can't stop that.
Question. Maybe this is a stupid question. If all the players, umpires, ball boys, etc., were tested, all of them don't have the coronavirus, do you need to have such strict restrictions on who touches the ball if all of them that day were proven to be healthy? Is that a stupid question? Or is that a legitimate question?
No, it makes
sense. If they're all healthy and they've all been tested and they're not, and it's that day, it's not like a day has passed, does that matter? Or is that more of a, this is a, it makes everyone feel safer and it's reducing sharing of any germs, right? I mean, I guess the other question with that is not all the tests have proven to be 100% accurate, right? There's a pretty stark chance that you can test negative and still have it, which is upsetting. But I'm assuming baseball will have the better tests. I don't know. Are there better tests? I'm assuming there are. But I guess maybe that's the risk, is like, we don't know for sure if you're healthy because you can get a false negative or a false positive for that matter. So maybe that's the answer. But if they're all healthy, that does seem a little bit weird. Because like in soccer, right? We're watching soccer right now. They're doing all these social distance things, right? The subs are not sitting on the bench. They're sitting 6 feet apart in the stands. They're all wearing masks. Most of the coaches are wearing masks. But the game has started. I'm assuming all these players have been tested. They're tackling each other. They're near each other. There's, you know, I'm assuming spit and bodily fluids all over the field. I mean, but they're all healthy, supposedly. So, you know, they're not really stopping the players from getting close to each other or the ref from getting close to them. So that's kind of a weird kind of middle ground to me, where it's like, if they're healthy, then why do you need to restrict so many things during the game?
Yeah, that's my big, and that's kind of my question was yours. Like, why does, if you know everybody's healthy before coming into the situation, coaches, trainers, everyone else, why the need to do all the extra? Like, now you're changing the game.
There might be science behind it saying that it could.
Is it airborne?
I mean, no, but it could. It stays in the air after, like, someone walks by. The droplets. They always say the droplets. But I don't know. That is a weird. Maybe there's a science behind that. But, you know, that is a weird thing to me. If you're all being tested, then you should probably just play the sport. Right?
Yeah.
If you're all fine. But I don't know. What do I know? I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist.
Neither of us are, bud.
This text says, you'll need hand sanitizer dispensers and dugout to hit the field. Umps, players, ground crew, Purell up. But check the Astros one for oily substances to doctor the ball. Yes. Do not let people forget that the Astros are cheating scum, okay? They're getting away with this because there's not going to be any fans to boo them at every single park they go to. Next year, when baseball's back with fans, you boo the Astros every single time. Make them remember that they're cheating a-holes. Okay? Okay. All right, let's take a break. Let's get a little last dance in before we get to Hate It or Love It. This is Sports Sunday on The Fan.
Weekend sports with a difference. This is Sports Sunday with Mike and Rashad on 1080 The Fan.
.10:19 here on your Sunday morning. Mike, Rashad, Joe with you here. 55305 is the fan text line. Last Dance wraps up tonight. Last two episodes.
Last dance of the last dance, huh?
Hey!
Play on words. You guys hear it.
It's so funny.
I'm often told that.
You're the songbird of your generation. That's what you're often told.
That's a real thing.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's real. But last week's episodes, I have a question based on last week's episodes, and I feel like I'm the only person who has thought this or asked this, because everybody, when talking about this scene, was like, oh my God, it was the greatest scene. It was such a great scene. And it was. I mean, it was the scene I'm talking about is the very end of the eighth episode, how it ended. Or was it the seventh one? I can't remember which one it was. Where Michael Jordan gets emotional and he starts crying while he's talking. And he's I think we actually might have the clip, Joe, if you could maybe find it. I don't know what I would have put it under, but MJ, maybe Jordan emotional or MJ emotional or something like that. I don't know.
Jordan crying like a little bee.
He's talking about his style of play. He's talking about his style of leadership and his way of practicing. And he gets emotional. We do have the clip. All right, let's just play it. This way I don't need to explain it.
When people see this, they're going to say, well, he wasn't really a nice guy. He may have been a tyrant. Oh, well, that's you, because you never wanted anything. I wanted to win, but I wanted them to win and be a part of that as well. Like, I don't have to do this. I'm only doing it because it is who I am. That's how I played the game. That was my mentality. If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way. Break.
Apparently that happened within the first couple of hours of them talking, and he'd talked for like 10, 15 hours with Michael Jordan. So that was very close to the surface. So I watched that. It was a cool moment. It was a very cool end to an episode. It was a good cliffhanger-y kind of thing. Am I the only one who was confused as to why he was crying about it? Like, everybody was like, oh my God, Michael Jordan is so emotional, and look at this, he feels a certain way. And I'm like, cool, like, I don't mind that. But why was he crying about saying the way he played, and if you don't want to play that way, don't play that way? Why was that so emotional to him? I just thought, I couldn't figure it out myself, and maybe I'm an idiot. Well, I am, but maybe I'm just not understanding it. But I just thought it was a weird time to show that level of emotion when so far we haven't seen a lot of that from him, at least in the documentary.
I agree. I kind of only had like maybe a one answer that can kind of maybe sum it up is when you spend a lot of time perfecting something, trying to be great at something, that's all that matters to you. Is the pursuit of that greatness, you know? And you guys have heard me say it before, like if you saw Kobe's Muse documentary that he did a few years ago, one of the things he said was he was just so focused on being the best that nothing else mattered. Like friends didn't matter, hanging out with other people. You see Kobe, once he stopped playing, now he's a guy that people want to be around. Now he's somebody people want to hug. You see, once Jordan stopped playing, now he's a guy that people embraced all of a sudden. You know, players embraced, because when they were playing, it was like, there's Mike and then there's, you know, everybody else. And I just kind of feel like Jordan sacrificed so much to be the best. And he looked at his teammates like, if I'm giving this up, if I'm doing this to be the best, why aren't you doing this to be the best? Why can't, and everybody's looking at me saying I'm an a-hole, I'm this because I'm trying to push everybody to be better. But man, I think that was the big thing for him. It was like, man, I've been trying to be at this level up top. And if people aren't trying to push themselves to be in this level up top, then what am I doing this work for? And if you don't want to play like that, then don't play like that. But I think he's given his entire life, and he's so great because he spent his whole world playing like that.
Do you think that that is a statement at all to the players of the current generation? Do you think he said that if you don't want to play that way, don't play that way, more to the current stars? Or is that him responding to critics of his style?
Like,
is he taking a shot, or is he just responding?
Probably a little bit of both. You know, for a long time, what do we hear about Jordan? He's a great player, but he's a ball hog, right? Selfish player, you know, in a lot of ways. You know, made players better, but then people will kind of say, well, who did he make better? Because who was better after Jordan left? You know, who became, outside of Scottie Pippen, who was already a great talent, like, name a player that after he left Jordan was better off for it. It doesn't really happen like that. And so I think there was a little bit of, you know, kind of some built up frustration and, you know, just saying that I played harder than everybody. And if they don't want to play like that, then don't blame me for being this dictator or this taskmaster.
So you think the reason he got emotional was because people dislike Michael Jordan because he was like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm asking that as an honest question because I'm trying to – I don't mind that he got emotional over it. I'm just trying to understand why it happened. Like, you know, I expect him to get emotional over his father passing away or winning the titles or this or that. But I just thought – I was just confused. And that's why – maybe that's why, because he gets blamed for being a bad person where he's just saying, I mean, it wound up being the right thing to do, right? We won 6 titles.
Yeah, it was – I think that's what it was more than anything, like, for at least for me, because I had to watch that scene a few times because I was kind of like, what's the emotion for it? Like, it's all, like you said, it's an odd time to be emotional just talking about the way you played. But if you're Jordan, like, the way you played in a lot of people's eyes was viewed as selfish and was viewed as – you know, you're a bad teammate because you punched key Steve Kerr. And you're a bad teammate because you said these bad things about your big men or the people that couldn't do stuff for you. And it's like, man, if you can't get on my level of competition and competitiveness, then I don't need you here. And I think that was – you heard Scott Burrell say, man, Jordan pushed us all to that level, but he forgets that he's the only one that can do some of these things. Like, and I think that was Jordan's big thing. There is a video, and it's an how-to video from Michael Jordan about playing basketball, right? How to,
like, an old VHS.
Yeah. And so there's a spot where he's talking about shooting a jump shot, an effective jump shot. And Jordan literally says, just spread your fingers, make sure the middle finger is, you know, kind of parallel to the rim, bend your knees, bend your elbows, and it should go in every time. Oh, thank you, Michael Jordan, greatest player of all time. You know, like, for him, it didn't register that he could do these things. For him, it was up fake with the hand, get you out, but fake behind the back. It's so easy for him. He doesn't think twice about it. But for everybody else, that takes a whole lot of work.
The 10,000 hours.
Yeah, and I think Jordan didn't understand that, man, I'm just a physical presence or physical freak at this time that the NBA has never, ever seen. Why can't you do this? You can't float in the air for 16 seconds? Huh, that's weird. You're a weird guy.
You can't jump from the free throw line to the rim and dunk a ball?
And I think that was his big thing. It was like, man, it's just, oh, man, yeah, you can't shoot, can't make a last-minute jump shot? That's easy. I do that all the time. I do it in my sleep.
I will say, because he said it in that clip, and there was an article written that Jordan was worried about how people would view him after this documentary. To me, I view him better than I did before because I'm seeing him as a human. All I've seen is Michael Jordan, the robot, amazing basketball player, right? The one who pushes himself and pushes his teammates and all that kind of stuff. Seeing him in these interviews, hell, making fun of other players, laughing at Gary Payton, which was a great clip, by the way. I don't have no problem with the glove. Like, I like that more because he's showing a human side. So, yeah, okay. I mean, I would not be the kind of person he was on the court if I was playing basketball. I wouldn't be, you know, the Michael Jordan type of leader, but I like the fact that I'm seeing the human side of him. So I'm not having a tarnished image of him. If anything, I'm having a better image of him because I understand who he is as a person more, right? Seeing that he does have emotions and he does care about certain things and he does have a sense of humor and all that kind of stuff. Like I like him more because of this documentary.
The one thing that I'm finding out most about Mike is while a lot of people in the league that play, they always have that guy that's like, man, you pushed me so much harder. Every time I played against you, man, I just knew I was going to be in for it. Like, there was not a person that he talked about en route to his championships that he was like, the only thing he ever said was Detroit. The Pistons made me stronger. They made me have to do this. They made me have to lift weights. They made me have to figure out how to tough through those things. That's the only compliment he ever gave anybody through there.
Actually, he gave Clyde a compliment.
He said Clyde was a good player, but I was, what'd he say? I was offended.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was offended that somebody put him in the same
breath as Clyde. But what he said was, he goes, that's not to say Clyde wasn't a threat. He was a threat, but I was offended that they put us in the same class. But that was like a backhanded compliment, right? Like, no, he was a threat because he just basically laughed at Gary Payton saying, Gary Payton, I had no problems with you.
He did that with everybody. You know, yeah. Like, it was like Clyde, like, for real, Clyde Drexler, and I was just talking to you about this, man, look at those playoff numbers from 1992. That man was amazing for 3 series up until he got to Chicago. I think he maybe just ran out of air at that point, couldn't do anything. But for 3 series, Clyde Drexler was by far and away the best player in the NBA playoffs that year. There's not a question. Until he got to the finals and played against Jordan and kind of ran out of gas. Jordan said, again, I was offended that Clyde was in the same conversation as me. didn't give Barkley a compliment. Barkley pushed him, you know, to six games. It was like, yeah, Charles is a good player. But talked about Gary Payton and laughed at the fact that Gary Payton says, yeah, I just getting tired. Just go out there and defend Mike. Gary Payton, one of the great defenders of all time, nicknamed the Glove because his defense was so good. And Jordan scoffed at the idea that
didn't have the will to win the championship.
Gary Payton. That he didn't have a peer. That's the thing about Michael Jordan. You know what I'm saying? Up until in the 1990s, there wasn't one guy that you could say that, yeah, that's Jordan's rival. When they play each other, they go at it. Man, John Starks? Oh, no. Reggie
more
Miller?
Patrick Ewing than Reggie John Miller? Starks.
Oh, but John Starks wasn't the one. I mean, Patrick Ewing wasn't the one guarding Jordan.
Yeah,
John Starks is getting.
Let's not call John
alive.
Starks the best player on that
but
team.
But that's what I'm saying. But he was one of the three. He was a top three player on that team.
Yeah, he was great.
You know,
but
he was good. And that's the saying.
He was above average.
Reggie Miller was as close to great as it got in the Eastern Conference, not named Michael Jordan. And Reggie Miller is really good. I mean, Reggie Miller's great. He's greatest of all time? No, but he's really, really good. And that was the thing. Like, Jordan didn't have a peer. The closest he got was Malone. And Malone was, you know, number two all time, or number, what, three now?
You say, we'll learn more about the Jazz tonight.
Yeah, and that's it. Outside of Malone and Stockton, I don't think anybody's going to get love. So I'm curious of how much he's actually going to give love to those guys.
Text from our drinking game friend. LeBron does not have the will to win a championship like Mike did. No, he does not have the will to win the championship like Mike did. That's why Mike has more, because he had the will to win the championship.
Yeah.
Did he have a will to win a championship?
I saw one.
You saw what?
A will to win a championship.
Hmm. Good. Good, good, good.
That bottle of champagne better be gone.
It better be gone. All right. Well, they could be taking small sips, I suppose, but you shouldn't be taking small sips. Okay. Let's get to Hate It or Love It next, and then we will wrap up the last half hour of the show. But first, Joe has SportsCenter.
Weekend sports with a difference. This is Sports Sunday with Mike and Rashad on 1080 The Fan.
That music means it is time for Hate It or Love It. If it's your first time listening, it is a competition segment. Joe will pose a question, a query, a interesting topic. We have to hate or love it, and then we get awarded points, and the winner gets to host the last segment. So, Joe, is it all sports today? Do we have any non-sports today? What do we got?
All sports.
All sports.
Well, let's hear it.
All sports. We are first going to start with Major League. As mentioned, they released a very long, convoluted, confusing, I don't know if it's going to be able to happen, rules and protocols to get play underway for the 2020 season and protect players and staff and everybody from COVID-19. But as mentioned, there is a lot of gray area in there. Listen back to us talk about it on the podcast once it's posted. But basically, after looking at all these rules and everything that they would need to do, yes, the MLB could technically start, but I wonder if it's going to last. So I ask you fellas, hate it or love it, the MLB will return, but will have to close down soon after. Meaning that something, you know, the situation will rise and we're going to be like, you know what? We can't pull this off anymore. Shut her down.
I'm going to say love. I don't know if it's going to shut her down like permanently. I think it might be a temporary shutdown, a 2 or 3 week hiatus to wind up going back to do it. I was going to say we could look at the sports that are starting now and try to make some sort of comparison to how the MLB is going to do, because remember, it's only May 17th and the MLB is starting their season in early July, which, by the way, the players have still not yet to agree to the contract they've put out there. But I was going to say, like, let's see what goes on in Germany, right? Bundesliga is starting. What's going to happen in 2 weeks? Are there going to be players that are testing positive? Are they going to be doing that? But you can't really use that as an example because Germany is having a different situation than the U.S. is having. It's tough to use NASCAR as an example because they're all in cars, right? I mean, there are people that are going to be in groups together, but it's going to be different than baseball. Baseball's kind of going to be the guinea pig in this because the NHL hasn't started. The NBA hasn't started back up again. Football doesn't start until September, late August anyway. So I could see baseball starting, having all of these rules in place, having all of these protocols you have to follow, but somebody's going to do something, go somewhere, come in contact with somebody through traveling or through ignoring the rules, and it's going to cause someone to get it. Now, the MLB has said that one person getting the coronavirus is not necessarily going to shut the league down, but I'm not sure that's actually going to be able to be true, because imagine the public pressure of someone getting coronavirus and them saying, yeah, okay, that guy's quarantined for 14 days and we're going to check these guys, but we're still going to play. You think that's going to go over well? You think people are going to be like, wait. We're trying to reduce the number of cases and you're just going to let all these players play and do all the things where they're near each other and you're going to try contact tracing and not stop it? I could see that causing a real issue where they would fold to the pressure and just shut down for 2 weeks or whatever the case is. So as much as I don't want to say love, I'll say love. They'll come back and then have to stop at some point.
That's hard. I'm gonna go ahead and say love as well. Just because there's still just too many moving parts. Baseball teams have how many people on the roster?
In this list, 30? They said for spring training, there can be 50 players.
50 players on a roster.
They didn't say who would be allowed to be on the active roster, which is normally 25. They were saying 30 because there's going to be more injuries and stuff like that. But, you know, somewhere, just imagine 25 to 30 players.
Yeah. Okay, so let's just go ahead and say there's 30 players on the team. And in most cases, we're talking about millionaires. It's big money in baseball. So these dudes have money. So their opportunity for them to be social and be out is, man, a lot higher than ours. You know, a lot of us that don't go out right now, not because we don't want to. A lot of it is because we can't do some of the extravagant things that, you know, you probably should be able to do if you have money. So a lot of these guys are going to be out. They're going to be moving. Baseball is one of those sports that's... you know, more than any other sport, it's a team sport. It requires a lot of, not requires, but there's a lot of, man, togetherness. There's the clubhouse is a much different place than a football locker room or a basketball locker room. These guys, it's almost like a little league type of feel a lot of times in the clubhouse. So there's always a lot going on. I think, like Lynch said, man, there's going to be people that go out. There's going to be people that do stuff. I'm not so much worried about the product on the field, because I believe if you're safe, if you get tested for corona, then you don't have anything to worry about. Baseball is the ultimate social distancing sport. Outside of the catcher and the umpire and the batter, like, everybody else is at least 90 feet apart, you know what I'm saying, somewhere around there. So you don't have to worry too much about that whole thing. But, yeah, I do think there's going to be something happen. One or two people from a team are going to get sick. And to prevent spreading to trainers, to, you know, other people that may work for the team, I think they might just shut down. They can't shut down a team, because then you have another team that won't be able to play said team in between there. So I think they wouldn't have a choice but to shut down the league for another month or so, or however long.
Well, good luck, MLB. We're pulling for you. And tonight are the final episodes of The Last Dance. We'll go through this one quickly. As expected, there should be a lot of people watching, but hate or love it, the last episode will pull at least 10 million viewers.
Hate. That's an easy hate for me. I think this is just generally what happens with documentaries, not necessarily TV shows, but documentaries. The numbers just slowly go down because you get the most interest early on, and then you get a bunch of people hanging on through it, but people drop off here and there. The numbers have been actually staying startlingly high for all the episodes, but they've been slowly dwindling, slowly, like a little bit reducing every single episode. So no, I mean, 10 million would be almost double what the average has been for the episodes. I'm going to say hate for that one. I can see some more people tuning in tonight because they know it's the last one. But I mean, when it started, it was the most hyped thing and it had 6 mil. So I think it'll have somewhere between 5 or 6 million tonight just because of that. It's not like a huge confluence of a long series where like everyone's watching the last episode of MASH. Where everyone's watching the last episode of Breaking Bad or Game of Thrones. It's like, yeah, it's a documentary and you'll be able to watch it again once it's done, and it's, you know, it's going to be different. So I'll say hate. I'll say it'll be 5 to 6 mil.
I'm looking at something here that was from the NBA official release. This is on May 4th. So this is, mind you, this is like 2 weeks ago. But every episode, let's see, it says right here, episodes 1 and 2 have averaged the minute audience of 13.1 million. I don't know. That's what it says right here. I didn't make it up.
In the first episodes?
It says episodes 1 and 2.
I was looking at Wikipedia, and that was not what it said.
Yeah, it says episodes 1 and 2 got 13 million people. So I know things have kind of fallen off since then, but I can imagine because this is the end of
episode 1 had 5.73 million U.S. viewers. Ah, U.S. viewers.
So I believe, like, you know, these last couple episodes, especially as you're talking about wrapping up the Jordan legacy, wrapping up the legacy of the greatest championship of all time, greatest championship team of all time, wrapping up the legacy of the greatest coach of all time, the greatest number two of all time. Like, this is one of those things I think a lot of people are going to, you know, look for this. And then you're talking about Jordan's last shot. You're talking about the flu game that you're going to talk about at this point. You're talking about obviously facing the Jazz twice in between them.
And the Pacers.
You're maybe even talking about Jordan coming out of retirement, Pippen going to the Blazers, and some of those things. Those are all going to be within the last 2 hours of this documentary. So, yes, I do think they're going to get record-breaking thing, especially this is the last series, this is the last type of series, anything that ESPN or anybody else has, not just ESPN, anybody else has. So, yeah, I think this is going to be a record-breaking night. I'm wearing my Jordans. I'm ready.
I don't understand the numbers because I'm looking at total viewers, and it says 7 mil for the first episode.
Yeah, I'm reading this thing. It's just on NBA.com.
So it's probably legit.
Yeah, so it says, after a record-setting initial audience, including viewing episodes 1 and 2 now have average minute audience of 13 million.
That's
and
so
13.1
weird.
Million.
God.
Okay. I don't understand numbers. All right, Joe.
Do we have time for one more?
Yes.
All right. Quentin Dunbar, obviously in some trouble. He turned himself in after the felony charges that he caught on Thursday. Just plain and simple. Obviously, the case has to work itself out, but hate it or love it, Quentin Dunbar will never wear a Seattle Seahawks jersey.
I'm going to say hate on that one because apparently there's like 5 witnesses who are saying it wasn't him who was doing this. The other guy, the Giants player, also turned himself in. It seems like misinformation was spread from this party. You know, when you first see the story, you're like, oh my God, what are these people? What are these guys doing? Like, you're in your off season, but come on, you just signed a big deal to go to the Seahawks, and what are you doing? I'm kind of just going to wait and see how this pans out because I don't know if this is something that I've noticed more just because I'm paying attention to it, or maybe it's happening more, but the amount of times that the story will change after the initial accusation, the initial allegations, is going up in these kind of situations. You know, maybe someone was mad at these two players, and maybe they did do something wrong, but maybe they instigated a fight or there was something going on. But for both of them to have, like, alleged robbery, and the story was that it was, like, at a friend's party, and it was not like they just broke into someone's house. And it was like, this is weird. And the fact that the lawyer came out for Dunbar and said, everyone we've talked to has said that it wasn't him who did it. He did nothing wrong. There's something different going on here with what the initial report was. So I'll say hate. He will play for the Seahawks because they'll find him innocent of the bad crime. That's what I'll say.
Bro. NFL needs to come back soon. These dudes are out here doing dirt, man. Man, Ed Oliver, Quentin Dunbar, DeAndre Baker, like, these dudes are out here tripping right now. So again, like Lynch said, man, there were multiple people that come out and said, man, Dunbar didn't have anything to do with that. But just to be in a situation to where people would say you had something to do with that isn't the best look for you. I do think NFL players, more than any other sport, get the biggest pass in the world when it comes to this stuff. Like, if this had been an NBA or maybe even Major League Baseball player, we had really talked about this guy and possibly, you know, is he good for the NBA? Is he good for Major League Baseball? Like, NFL is the one league that, man, it's almost kind of, if you don't have a mugshot, then you're the weird one in the league for not doing that. So I do think he'll play for the Seahawks again. I think they'll definitely make it. When you're good, they'll figure it out. And if he were trash, if he were third, fourth string, nobody would care. But the fact is, he's pretty good. So I think because of that, Pete Carroll and the Seahawks will find a way to bring him back.
Valiant closing effort, Rashad, but Michael is your winner.
All good.
All right. One final segment to go. This is Sports Sunday on the Fan.
Weekends were made for sports. This is Sports Sunday with Mike and Rashad on 1080 The Fan.
So I have a question.
Answer.
Next week is Memorial Day weekend.
Yes.
Most of the state is open. Are we, like, allowed to go to a different county and do stuff? Like, we're not open.
Lake Tahoe, here I come!
I wasn't thinking that extreme, but... you know, like, could we go to Hood River or something? Like, could we go to the coast? Are we allowed? I know, I heard, I didn't see this, but I heard that Kate Brown said that we shouldn't leave the counties that haven't been opened again, but, like... Can they enforce that? Like, are we allowed to do that?
Well,
I feel weird about it because it's like my county's not open. I live in Washington County. That's not open yet. But if I go to Hood River County for a day because I want to go like do something, anything other than sit in my home, then can I do that?
Well, I know that they were saying don't go to restaurants if they're not in your county. Like if it's in an approved county and you do not live there, do not go. And you shouldn't go. But all the, like, the beach counties have been approved for phase one, and people, I know that some beaches over in Europe have been reopened, and that's one thing that I'm looking at before Memorial Day weekend is the beaches, if those are going to be open and allowed, and people can mingle and go down there and kick it for a few hours or whatever. I mean, granted, the Oregon beaches aren't usually ideal to just sit and hang out there because of the wind, and it can get kind of wild, but I don't know.
I think you're fine. Like, honestly, the stuff in your county isn't open, but that doesn't mean that you can't go to another county.
Well, like, right.
Hang out.
Like, you drive from where I live, you drive 30, 40 minutes and you're in wine country and you're in Yamhill County, right? You're telling me I can't go to a winery that's open?
I'm not saying that.
Well, I'm saying you as in the general you of the Oregon government. You know, let's say like, so Joe says the restaurant thing, right? Let's say I want to go to Double Mountain next week on Friday and I want to go get some beer and I want to go say hi to a friend and go to Hood River. And, you know, what's going to happen to me? Nothing. I imagine. Is that okay? Like if I'm healthy, is that okay? Because I'm going insane.
You just
not being able to leave my neighborhood.
You just said the key words. If I'm healthy,
yeah.
If you're healthy, I say yes. You should be able to go, especially if your things in your neighborhood are still kind of shut down. And like in most of our neighborhoods, things are still hella shut down. So, man, absolutely. I say go for it. Like, I mean, I totally.
Because I'm taking a four-day weekend next week.
I know.
I took Friday off. I'm going to take the Sunday show off. We're off Monday. And I don't want to just sit at my house for 4 days. I don't want to be there for four straight days doing nothing because that's what I've been doing anyway. So... I mean, like, just right. Just
I say do it, man. I think
just take the hour drive that way. And
I mean, I think it'd be a great idea. If nothing else, you get a nice drive. You know, even if you get there and like, oh, we're not having anybody today. He was like, oh, well, at least I had a nice drive.
Yeah. Hood River's pretty.
Did something. Yeah. You know,
walk around.
Yeah. I will say that. Take a drive, people that are listening. I mean, like.
And listen to us on the radio.
Yeah. Only us. And I mean,
nobody else.
Yeah. Go hit the.
No, that's a real thing. Just this one. Yes.
I mean, it will do a lot for your mental health.
All of your presets should say 1080.
Yes, and just Sports Sunday and the Hot Corner.
And primetime.
Mm.
yeah, it's just I feel weird about it, you know? That's the weird thing about all of this is a lot of things don't feel right anymore. Like normally, hell yeah, I'll drive an hour to go out to Hood River, go to Freem, go get some good beer, go to Double Mountain, go to Ferment. I mean, just, honestly, I would just go and drink beer. But I saw Frames not opening. I know, I haven't seen anything from Double Mountain yet, so I don't know if they're opening, actually. But it's just the thought of, like, you have a four-day weekend, you go do something with it. Maybe I go take a hike or something, I guess.
No, I mean, it's one of those things. And I think all of us kind of feel in the same way. It's like, well, should I go do something? Should I get out? I'm telling you this, I'm having a barbecue in my front yard. That'll be fun. I encourage everybody to get out in your front yard and have a social distancing barbecue. That'll be fun.
And go see your friends social distance style, too. It helps. I did that a couple weekends ago. It was nice to see some people and not be in the same general bubble that you've been the entire time. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Thank you guys so much for listening. Last Show Up Tire Podcast is where you can find the show if you missed any event and want to listen back to it. Like I said, I'm going to be out next Sunday. It'll be Joe and Rashad here for you, 9 to 11 a.m. wrapping up The Last Dance and then talking about whatever else is happening in the sports world and the non-sports world at that point. So enjoy your Memorial Day weekend. Hopefully you can go do some stuff or at least have some social distance fun or barbecue or whatever it is you want to do. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll keep getting through this like we have been. And thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you. I'll see you in a couple of weeks, but we'll see you next week for the show.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.